As we gather this morning, we hold many things in our midst. In some ways, this is particular to the week we have been living through, a week of bad dreams coming true, a week of escalated fear and sadness, a weekend of marching. And in other ways, holding many things together at once is part of our weekly reality. The time in the service where we share our joys and concerns is a constant and a profound reminder of this. We name the things tugging on our hearts and minds like candles and hold the silence for a moment, knowing full well that we hold much more in our midst that has not been named. Since the beginning of my days here, it has been my most favorite part of the service, a profound reason why we gather. Today, this day in particular, we turn our attention to the endowment, to the sustainability of this fellowship, to the long-term visions and commitments that we have. Today is also my last Sunday here with you, and at least for me, my heart is full of gratitude, sadness, joy, wonder, grief, pride, love, delight, and much, much more. Today is the first Sunday with the 45th president of these United States in office. And like many of you, that fills me with anger, sadness, fear, and a readiness to double down on our justice commitments, our commitments to take action together. And so we hold all these things together and more. Walk with me as we weave through the tangled mess of this day. Look with me at one whose voice seems to be offering wisdom in the midst of these days. During seminary, research methods turned out to be one of my favorite classes. This was a surprise to me. Had I been given the choice to skip the class and take something else instead, I probably would have. That said, I do like a good challenge, and as you might imagine, I dove in with both feet. Picking a research topic, though, was hard. After all, I'd always had so many different interests that at times it felt like an Achilles heel. But during this time, I was already sharing life with Maria, knowing I had found the love of my life and still trying to understand how I might find room to live, to be, to live out our calling. As I tried to make sense of the culture wars being waged all around me, I decided to research the same-sex marriage debate in California, commonly known as Proposition 8. Vast amounts of money were spent in this state debate. Clearly, those involved thought more than California was at stake. Where I ended up focusing my energy and attention was on the religious and moral arguments that were waged, and even more profoundly, how they swayed the debates and eventually the outcome. But the arguments in support of same-sex marriage largely avoided moral language, defaulting to the language of civil liberties. It's not that this wasn't a good argument in support of same-sex marriage, but it is that the arguments were flying past one another in the airwaves, never really addressing the other side's claims. I was fascinated by the findings and paid attention more and more to religious and moral language being used in the public sphere. As I headed into my final semester at Emory at the spring of 2014, I took a capstone class to complete the requirements for my degree program. This one would require an even larger research paper, and once again, I got to pick the topic. Given my growing interest in religion in the public sphere, I turned my attention to the work of William Barber and the Moral Mondays movement unfolding just a few miles away in North Carolina. Many of you already know this movement. The Moral Mondays protest began in response to the newly dominant Republican legislature in North Carolina. They took complete control of power of the North Carolina in 2012 with the election of Pat McCrory for the first time in 140 years. They quickly began legislating a wide range of changes. They cut taxes and eased regulations on businesses as expected, but over the course of their first session in power, they also imposed stricter regulations on abortion clinics, blocked the expansion of Medicaid, cut unemployment benefits, ended teacher tenure, mandated the teaching of cursive writing, allowed concealed weapons in bars and restaurants, removed obstacles to the death penalty, and restricted voting rights. North Carolina, long a state hailed for its pragmatism, was now controlled by a more conservative ideology, or as Barbara would call it, a more extremist ideology. In a recap of the session, a conservative policy institute wrote, "The number of reforms and improvements," quotes are mine, "implemented in just one session may be unprecedented for any state government in the modern era. Even consistently red states typically take years to accomplish what North Carolina did in the span of 6 months." Reverend William Barber II, president of North Carolina NAACP and Disciples of Christ minister, was ready to lead the charge against these changes. Though the Moral Mondays movement appears to have quickly emerged from nothing, in fact, the movement was a result of 7 years of organizing. Barber calls their effort a new Southern fusion politics, which he defines as a multi-ethnic, multi-religious coalition with an anti-racist, anti-poverty agenda. The goals are to attack the old divisions of the white Southern strategy and the shortcomings of the so-called Christian evangelical right that limits the issues in the public square to things like prayer in schools, abortion, and gender issues. Barber and others had already begun their community organizing and had established a relationship that gave the Moral Mondays protests some momentum upon which to build. In the years since my research project, Barbara has been looked to more broadly for wisdom and guidance. This past summer, he was the keynote speaker at the UUA General Conference, and his book, The Third Reconstruction, is this year's UUA Common Read. I know a number of you joined the discussion about the book with Denise Frick, Chiranjeev Peterson, and Jim Hittigan this past fall. On February 22nd, he will be at Furman University, and I encourage you to attend. Let me just tell you a little bit more about him and the long view that he takes, and why his voice is one that I'm listening to these days. Barber was born in Indianapolis 2 days after Martin Luther King Jr.'s delivery of his famous "I Have a Dream" speech. His father was a minister and activist. He was so motivated by the civil rights movement that he decided to move his family back to eastern North Carolina and help desegregate schools. Barber's father taught science at a formerly all-white high school, and his mother was the school's first black office manager. Following the example of his parents, Barber, too, became a young leader and activist. He was president of the NAACP Youth Council at 15, president of his high school student body at 17, and president of student government at North Carolina Central University at 19. In 1984, Barber worked on Jesse Jackson's first presidential campaign. Education was a priority for Barber. He earned a Master's of Divinity from Duke Divinity School and completed his PhD in public policy and pastoral care at Drew University. He's an avid student of North Carolina history, and he utilizes this knowledge in many of his speeches. Barber roots his vision of fusion politics in North Carolina's late 19th century history, when the state's populist and Republican parties, comprised of blacks and whites, joined forces to govern the state. His understanding of North Carolina history also grounds the Moral Mondays movement. By late summer 2013, Barber had developed a stump speech entitled "This is the Day," which he delivered on numerous occasions. In it, he situates the current movement in a long history. Barber claims that he and his fellow protesters must look back and understand from whence they have come in order to know how to fight in the present moment. He says, 145 years ago, blacks and whites, coming out of the ugly and dehumanizing vestiges of slavery and a brutal civil war, came together to imagine a new South and build a new world together. What a marvelous vision 145 years ago, 100 years even before the modern civil rights movement, 145 years ago, they dreamed of a world where we would work together. As I mentioned earlier, Barber's vision is one of fusion politics, which he defines as a multi-ethnic, multi-religious coalition with an anti-racist, anti-poverty agenda. Sometimes he refers to this current reality as the Third Reconstruction, which is the title of his book. The first Reconstruction was African-American voting rights in the period immediately following the Civil War. The second was the Civil Rights Movement of the 1950s and 60s. His book claims we're in the embryonic stage of a third period of Reconstruction. And I, for one, hope this is true. A reporter covering the movement in 2014 had this to say about it. The Moral Mondays movement really represents the diversity of North Carolina. It's young, it's old, it's black, it's white, it's brown, it's very socioeconomically diverse. The main accomplishment of the movement has been to be so inclusive. Everyone feels welcome. No one is fighting for one issue. Everyone is fighting for each other's rights. The realization finally within the progressive community is that all of these things are related. You can't just have single-issue advocacy. It has to be this multiracial, multi-issue coalition if they're going to fight the legislature on so many fronts. So why have I spent so much time this morning telling you about the moral movement, this possible third Reconstruction period, and William Barber? Most simply, this is a place I find inspiration and wisdom these days, in a time when there are many reasons to be despairing. Such a time as this leaves many of us asking, what are we to do? How should we respond when justice is being threatened on so many fronts, when lives are being threatened on so many fronts? Black and brown lives, women's lives, immigrant lives, queer lives, Muslim lives. There's much to be concerned about and much to do. In some ways, it feels like North Carolina was a trial run. Perhaps if we can figure out a way to truly be a part of a movement with a multi-ethnic, multi-religious coalition with an anti-racist, anti-poverty agenda, we might at least be headed in the right direction. The Declaration of Conscience, sent out by leaders of the UUA this past week, which Jackie read, gives me hope that we're already connected to something larger. With so much to do these last days as we try to finish our jobs well, find a place to live, and many, many more things. Maria and I are currently living in the just-in-time mode. You might imagine. As I was leaving to come to the fellowship yesterday morning for a training, Maria and I finally turned to one another and asked each other if we were going to try to make it to the march for Greenville. When I drove home just before noon in the pouring down rain, we wavered back and forth about whether to go. And we sat there moping over a sandwich and knew it was time to put on our rain boots, grab our ponchos and umbrellas, and get there. As we walked across the bridge, we saw face after face of people we know and love. So many of those faces are the same ones I see sitting in this room this morning. The sheer number of you that I saw, even in the pouring down rain, gives me hope. In that moment, we knew that we were not alone. We knew that there was power in our gathering. We knew there was energy and passion to resist, to dissent. We knew there was commitment to stand up for Black lives, women's lives, queer lives, Muslim lives, immigrant lives. One of the things that I wanted to do today was to take a few minutes to tell you what it's meant to serve as your minister. And somehow it was embodied in that moment we shared together yesterday afternoon in the pouring down rain. We don't just show up here to make ourselves feel good and pat ourselves on the back. We show up because we need each other. We show up because we need to stand together. We show up because this fellowship has stood with the marginalized from its earliest days, and today is not the day to give up on those commitments. I will always be grateful for the space you have offered me to find my voice, to walk around in these minister's shoes, and to stand beside you in a myriad of moments and places this past year. You have inspired me. You have supported me. You have loved me. You have challenged me. And I will forever be grateful. My heart is full of love for all of you. And even now, as our time face to face is coming to a close, I hope that we might continue looking to one another for inspiration, for wisdom, for connection, for hope, for commitment. And may we point one another towards wisdom voices in our midst. Go hear Reverend Barber. Read his book. Lean on one another. Stand beside each other. Translate values into action. Stand on the side of love with the most vulnerable among us. The time is now.